Case number 5, United States versus Shelton.
Thank you. May it please the court, the evidence obtained against Danny Shelton from his computer should be suppressed because the judicial officer that issued the warrant allowing the officer to search Mr. Shelton's computer did not have sufficient evidence to establish probable cause for the search warrant. In addition to that, the officer could not have reasonably relied upon the search warrant because it lacked a sufficient indicia of probable cause. The facts necessary to analyze the search warrant on Mr. Shelton's case are fairly brief. Mr. Shelton took his computer to a local Staples store so that they could repair it because the computer was running slow. The person who was repairing the computer looked into some video files, and there was a video file that was described as a 12-year-old or a girl appearing to be about 12 years old undressing to a state of nudity. At that time, law enforcement was contacted.
What privacy expectations does somebody in that situation have when they turn over a computer and a hard drive to a third party?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that there is a privacy expectation that exists. When he turned over the computer to the Staples store, he wanted a repair, so the removal of the files, things of that nature, are fine if the person removed those files. But I think what's critical here is that the officer, when he engaged in the search of the computer, only had limited information, which was that there was two video files that contained an image of a 12-year-old girl undressing to nudity. That was the information that was conveyed to the judge that issued the search warrant. That information was not sufficient to establish that there was, in fact, illegal images on the computer. The image as described certainly could be consistent with images that are protected by the First Amendment. And as this court has noted in prior decisions, more specifically United States versus Griesbeck, more than nudity is required to make an image lascivious. The focus of the image must be on the genitals, or the image must be otherwise sexually suggestive. Nothing in the search warrant indicated that the image was sexually suggestive, that it contained sexual conduct, that there was a focus on the genitals, or that the genitals were even exposed in the video. And we, on some level, may assume that that video was not, in fact, considered to be child pornography, as Mr. Shelton was not charged with that video, and he was not convicted of possessing that video. Rather, he was convicted of having images that were found as a result of the search that was allowed by the search warrant. So in other words, the officers do not find these images unless and until the judicial officer issued the warrant to search his computer at that time. The images that he was charged with were located inside a recycle bin in the computer. And again, they were not the images that the law enforcement officer was called to take a look at. They certainly weren't the subject of the search warrant that was issued.
That was the second search warrant.
No, Your Honor, that was the initial search warrant.
No, but there was a second search warrant.
Sorry, Your Honor, I apologize. Yes, Your Honor, there was a second search warrant.
And that's where this other stuff came to light, wasn't it?
That is correct.
So if the first search really didn't exceed what person at Staples saw, don't we have to look at the validity of the second search warrant, which I don't think is challenged?
Well, Your Honor, if in fact the first search warrant uncovered images that were the crux of a second search warrant. So if, in fact, the first search warrant is deemed invalid, then the second search warrant should be deemed invalid as well, as it would be a fruit of the poisonous tree from the first search warrant. Your Honor, again, in looking at whether or not Detective Myro, who is the officer who presented the information to the judge at his home that evening when he read through the affidavit and then signed off on the search warrant, he could not have reasonably relied upon he could not have believed that probable cause existed or that the affidavit presented to the judge contained the requisite probable cause. Again, he is an Indiana officer. He's trained in Indiana. The Indiana statute explicitly states what is considered to be sexual conduct, and sexual conduct was not described in the affidavit. And so the judicial officer should have seen that the requisite elements were not met, but he did not. He went ahead and signed off on that search warrant, despite the fact that there was not sufficient information for him to sign off on that information. No images were shown to the judicial officer at the time. No video was shown, nothing. And again, this video was not charged. Mr. Shelton is not convicted of the video that was supposedly enough for probable cause, yet lacked a description of anything coming close to sexual conduct. In looking at the Greaseback case, I think it's also notable that the prosecutor themselves, when discussing with the court the line between child erotica and child pornography, conceded that if the affidavit failed to establish probable cause to believe that the image was pornographic, then the warrant is unconstitutional. So it could be that whether or not the officer relied in good faith upon the warrant is irrelevant, because if, in fact, the warrant is unconstitutional, then that would eliminate the need for the good faith analysis. However, in light of the information contained in the four corners that were presented to the judicial officer, we believe that it lacked probable cause, that Detective Myros could not have reasonably relied upon the warrant for purposes of the search, and we ask for all of the evidence to be suppressed against Mr. Shelton. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Gail Hellert, and I represent the government and have throughout this case. To first start with the question about the search warrants, there was one search warrant, we'll call that number one, that was issued for both the computer left at the Staples store and the residence. And once they got to the residence, they seized a number of computer disks. Those couldn't have been searched without a second search warrant. Those disks did hold images that were charged in counts 1, 2, 3, and 4. However, on the computer in warrant 1, in the actual computer still at Staples, in the recycle bin, there were the very same images. So there was enough in the computer to go ahead and charge without any of the evidence in the house. So those images lied really in two places to clear that issue up. The issuing judge in this case properly determined probable cause based on the totality of the circumstances described in the affidavit. Examples that the issuing judge had before him was the credibility of the informant source, that is, a properly motivated citizen at the Staples store who had seen this video file. So there was a nexus to the thing to be searched, that is, this computer. It was within 3 days of Mr. Shelton bringing it in. The basis of the citizen's knowledge was that he himself had actually seen the video file. And most importantly, probably in this case, is the inferences about the video file and what it meant to be on the computer. That is, it was described as a 12-year-old girl undressing, but she was alone in a bedroom setting. She was undressing to nudity, and it was a file that had to be on one format and then purposely saved onto the computer in an electronic format. The judicial officer, therefore, can infer the person's purpose was sexual arousal, consistent with the state of Indiana statute, because a 12-year-old girl is just simply unlike a baby in a bathtub picture. And the judicial officer...
It appears that she didn't know she was being videoed.
It is true that she didn't appear she...
She was unaware of the fact.
Correct. That she hadn't... Right, correct. That she didn't appear that the camera was even going, so that would infer someone else had set up the camera to take that of her. The judicial officer could also, of course, infer the person's purpose because it had been retained from one format onto another. The officer, in this case, we don't need to get to Leon, but if this court finds a lack of probable cause, the warrant should be upheld under the Leon good faith exception. The officer's effort here to even obtain a warrant is prima facie evidence of good faith. And the officer worked on the investigation himself. He went to a prosecutor to assist with the warrant because that's the policy in Decatur County. The officer went to the judge. The officer actually obtained a warrant, and it was reasonable for him to believe in its validity because the warrant described an image on the computer which would fit the Indiana state conduct of sexual conduct. The actual description also was not a conclusory statement. It was not, for example, there's child pornography on the computer, says the Staples employee. It was actually described in its content. So this was not, to meet the defense argument, not mere nudity. The issuing court here and the district court also properly analyzed it under the totality of the circumstances. It was a 12-year-old girl. She was by herself in a bedroom, which is a place associated with sex, and the image lived on a video file first, then on his computer, therefore available for Mr. Shelton, the owner of the computer, to view again and again. This is not a 12-year-old girl, for example, at a nudist volleyball camp. So with that, we think there is enough evidence to uphold the computer search, and we'd ask the court to affirm both the issuing judge's decision to do it and the district court's decision in affirming that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. The government asked you to believe that the court was able to infer a whole lot of information, but none of which was contained within the four corners of the probable cause affidavit that was issued to the judicial officer. We are expected to assume that the judicial officer knew that the files were transferred from one type of media to another, although it was not contained within the four corners of the probable cause affidavit. We are expected to assume that the judicial officer somehow knew that this met the definition under the Indiana statute, which requires, again, some sort of a lewd and lascivious exhibition of genitalia, sexual conduct, or deviant sexual conduct, and that was not described within the four corners of the probable cause affidavit. The judicial officer did not review this file. Again, this file was not charged, so we have no clue whether or not this file was in fact child pornography, but we can assume that it was not because it was not charged, and it is not an image to which Mr. Shelton pled guilty because it was never charged. Basically, the government would like us to rely upon a bunch of assumptions and assume that the judicial officer relied upon assumptions that were not presented to him. The judicial officer could have inquired further in order to establish probable cause on this case, but he did not. And since he did not, since he is required to look at the four corners of the probable cause affidavit, since he did nothing to inquire further, when looking at that probable cause affidavit, The conduct described in the affidavit is consistent with images that are protected by the First Amendment, and because the description is consistent with images protected by the First Amendment, the evidence obtained against Mr. Shelton should be suppressed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.